Hello. Well, we've not quite finished our celebration of water yet, although by the sound of it, Emma rather wishes we had.
Oh, okay, I'm going to do it. Dangerous. Literally just for Radio 4.
There you go. That's Emma in the water, swimming.
We'll be accompanying Emma, Robin and children to one of their favourite swimming sites and exploring the delights and the dangers of open and cold water swimming. But first, another attempt to make the country's leading spectator sport more accessible to visually impaired people. We've been used for many years now to in-stadium commentaries on football matches for people with no or only a little sight. But last Saturday at Crystal Palace's Selhurst Park, partially sighted fans made use of what is now a permanent feature there, the Give Vision device. Now, that provides people who have some remaining vision with an enhanced view of the game with the aid of a special headset powered by an in-stadium 5G connection. They can watch a streamed view of the game in real time, no time lag, brought up close to the part of their eye with the strongest vision. It also has a binocular mode, which is essentially like a magnifier, where fans can zoom right in to see the action happening on the pitch. Several clubs have shown an interest, but Palace seem to have been the quickest off the mark. In a moment, we'll be talking to two people who went to the game and tried the devices out, but we're also joined by Joanna Liddington, Head of Operations at Give Vision. Joanna, first of all, what kind of response have you had? I mean, we'll talk about Palace in a minute, but generally, what sort of response are you getting from clubs?
We've had a really great response all around. You know, when we first started up, there was a little bit of education required. There were a couple of clubs that felt they had very few visually impaired fans, which I can assure you is absolutely not the case. But yeah, we've been really lucky. And I know you mentioned we trialled it a few places to have quite a few clubs who are really, really keen to take part in this and said, you know, absolutely, why would we not give this a try?
Why do you think Palace have gone for it in such a big way?
When you're at Palace, you really see the answer to that. You can really tell that the staff at Palace feel part of the community with the fans, and they want to do everything they can to, you know, work with that community and have more and more people attending matches. We've got to know more and more Palace fans who have low vision. And I think even a club like Palace, who has really great and really close relationship with lots of their fans, are starting to realise that actually there's even more than they'd known about. Quite frankly, just because, you know, not everyone wants to go to their local club and say, oh, hey, I've got a vision permit. You absolutely don't need to do that.
Right. Let's bring in two people who were at Selhurst Park on Saturday evening, Susan Vernon and Phil Green. Susan, let me start with you. First of all, just describe the experience you had using the device.
I find it hard to put into words because it was so fantastic. I was almost in tears the first time I used it. You know, I put them on and I thought, well, I can actually see. I don't have to talk to the person who is with me to ask who scored the goal, who made a foul, who's been sent off, who's come on. I could see for myself.
Just to explain about your eyesight, you know, what state it's in.
Right. Well, I have macular degeneration, and so it's my central vision. That's impaired. So if something's happening in front of me, yes, I can see it. I can't pick out things. I can pick out the numbers, but not names. And when they go the other end of the pitch, I can't see a thing. So I have to rely on somebody to tell me. I had actually said to my son a few days previously, I'm not going to renew my season ticket for next year. There's no point. I can't hardly see anything. And he was trying to encourage me. I actually tried this headset last week at the Leicester game. And I thought, if they can give me this every home game I come to, I'll renew for next year. So I call that my powerful punch.
Let me bring in Phil. Phil Green, yours is slightly different. You've got a temporary eyesight problem. Just explain what's happened.
Well, I had renewed my season ticket, but I became quite seriously visually impaired just going into August. So I couldn't attend the first two home games. Wasn't expecting to attend on Saturday. I was a little bit apprehensive, to be honest, at first about, you know, sitting in a large crowd wearing the headset. But I met with Stan from Give Vision on the Friday, who tentatively sat and went through it all with me, gave me an opportunity to sort of play with the headset. That boosted my confidence enormously. So I was able to return on Saturday to sit with my friends in my normal spot.
That's really interesting, because traditionally with other systems, like the ones with just commentary, quite often you tend to have to go to a particular part of the ground to use it. And these, as I gather, can be used in any part of the stadium. How important do you think that is? You can sit where you like.
My friends, they're all season ticket holders. We've been going for years. So for me, it was absolutely brilliant that I could enjoy their company, enjoy the game, and feel normal again for 5 minutes, because it's been quite, you know, difficult. The things I've been going through, mine's obviously slightly different because, I'm hoping and praying my eyesight will improve. But in the meantime, I can still enjoy normal things now, including watching Paris.
Right. Let me just quickly go back to Susan. Just give us a sense of how much you can see now on the pitch.
I mean, I can see it all. You can zoom in and out, and when somebody's going to score, you can see them. You watch them and you see them score, and you can actually see the expressions on their faces.
Joanna, just quickly, finally, back to you. These schemes, you know, sometimes come along and there's a big fanfare of trumpets and lots of enthusiasm, and then for one reason or another, you know, they don't quite really take off or stay. Do you think this is here to stay?
I absolutely do. We've had really great feedback everywhere we've gone, and we've just done, for example, the Olympics and the Paralympics. We're hoping that this will become the new accessibility standard for people with low vision. But yeah, absolutely, we expect a lot of other clubs to step up now and take this on as well.
Well, Joanna Liddington, and especially Susan Vernon and Phil Green, thank you all very much indeed. But if your thing isn't just watching but taking part, we've had plenty of evidence lately on the programme that taking to the water, what with Paralympic twins and solo channel swimmers, is what floats quite a lot of visually impaired people's boat. But for Emma and Robin, it's cold water swimming that really does it for them. We join the family as they set off for one of their favourite watery destinations.
Right, so we're coming towards the sailing club now, our local sailing club, and there are beaches actually closer. This is about 12 or 15 minutes walk. Our closest beach is about 6 minutes walk, but this has a brand new slipway. And the reason I like to swim at the slipway is because it has sides and a concrete floor, so I'm not worrying about rocks, and I can really spatially tell where I am until I'm quite deep. We've got the boys with us. Why were you hitting me?
I don't know.
You don't know? Okay.
Other people are here.
Other people are here swimming?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Hi.
How's it going?
Good.
Good. Nice night for it.
So we're going to get dressed. So can I go near a side, Robin?
More to this side, to the right. Someone's popped a bench here. This is fab.
Oh, new bench. So we're about to go in. Got a swimsuit and little swim shoes on to protect my feet. And Robin's going to take over now. He can record me squealing as I enter the water. Is it cold, Arlo?
So we're heading down into the water, and your feet are now about to go into the water. Lovely.
Oh!
There you go.
Now, you will hear a lot of noises from me.
So it's about 10 metres high. You can hear the water probably lapping either side of it.
Very cold.
And we're looking right across to Edinburgh. Got some little boats in the near distance.
It's really cold. My legs are really complaining.
Come on, Em, you can do it. Go for it. Go on.
I'll pass my tummy.
Go for the plunge.
Put my hands in. That's one of the tricks. And honestly, you feel so good after this, but I find it so, so difficult to get down. I'm going to do it.
Down
literally just for Radio 4.
There you go. That's Emma in the water, swimming.
It's so cold. I literally can't catch my breath.
Woo! Daddy's in!
How do you feel, Mum?
Lovely.
Once you get down for a while, you do get used to it. It makes you feel so alive. I feel my muscles starting to relax. I can even feel my face starting to relax.
How do you feel, Robin?
Feels really bracing and cold, quite invigorating.
Here, I've got all the space in the world because it goes right out into the sea. I've got sides if I need them. There's no trying to get to a pool. There's no trying to get up and down the pool without hitting somebody. There's no trying to get home again. It's all easy peasy. And that's why I like this instead of swimming pools.
Ask Daddy why he likes to swim in the sea.
Why do you like to swim in the sea?
Well,
Robin?
I love swimming in the sea because it just gives you an incredible sense of freedom, and it's really good for your mental health. It makes you feel great for the rest of the day. I think if you've got low vision, one of the things you might find tricky is maybe getting to the swimming pool. So we're really lucky we live right next to the sea. So we can walk down at any time, send a message to the group and meet up with other people. So it's super easy.
So I've got dressed, I'm in my dry robe, I'm a little chilly. I'm just going to head back and open my cane out and off we go.
Go back to the house.
We're back home, had our showers, we're just having a hot cup of tea and just been thinking about the reasons why it's so nice to go for a cold water swim. And one of those reasons is actually the opportunity to warm up and get cosy and have a cup of tea, and you still are left with that kind of chilled out, relaxed feeling. Would you say the same thing, Robin?
It's a lovely warm glow. And actually, I should have mentioned, in the water we typically use something called a toe float, which you clip around your waist, and it's basically like a brightly coloured 20 litre plastic pillow. So you can grab onto it, it floats along behind you. If you got into any difficulty, you could just grab it and hug it and it would keep you afloat. So it's really reassuring to have that.
When do you think we'll get our next swim, Robin?
I'm hoping we can get back out on the water in a few days' time. I just look forward to it because it's such a great feeling. It's sociable when you get a chance to connect with other people, and it just makes you feel good. I wouldn't recommend people going to do this alone. Do it with a group or with another person who has experience of open water swimming, but it's something that you might just really enjoy and feel the benefits of.
When Robin says open water swimming, I think there's two types. There's the one where you get in and you swim for a kilometre, and there's the one where you get in and do a dip and mess about for 10 minutes. So just make sure that the person you're going with is going to do the type of swimming that you want to do. But just to say that the nice thing is that everybody does it in a group. So if you're visually impaired or blind, actually, you know, you don't feel left out because everyone's doing it in a group. And there's a good kind of lift network and stuff like that for people who don't drive. And it's kind of expected that there'll be people of all ages, all shapes and sizes, different impairments. You know, it's a very, very inclusive thing.
Emma Tracy and Robin Spinks and family. So what is it about open water or wild swimming and cold water swimming in particular, which drives people to endure that initial shock to the system? And does it have any particular advantages for visually impaired people? Well, Dr. Catherine Kelly is a geographer at Brighton University who's been extensively researching how access to so-called blue spaces are good for our well-being. And she brought quite a lot of that research to the All-Party Parliamentary Group for Swimming. Catherine, enthusiasm for open water swimming does seem to be growing generally. Why do you think that is?
Yes, indeed. Outdoor swimming or open water swimming or wild swimming, it has lots of different names, has really increased exponentially since COVID. And I think that was probably a reaction to everybody feeling quite locked in. Being in or indeed next to water has been shown to reduce our stress. Our breathing regulates when we listen to the sound of water. Our heartbeat slows down. It's a very, very mindful exercise, particularly when you're getting into cold water, because you can't think of much else except sensation of the temperature.
We heard Emma couldn't think of much else when she was trying to do that.
Absolutely. So you're not thinking about your work or any of your problems in that moment. You are there with your body and your breath. All of these kind of responses increase dopamine, which is the happy hormone, stimulates our vagus nerve, which is a kind of a natural anti-inflammation and antidepressant response. So it's not just a notion that you feel better when you get out of cold water. You physically and psychologically do.
And yet, Catherine, you would have thought that immersing yourself in freezing cold water could be quite a shock to the system.
Yeah.
Is there a right way and a wrong way to do it?
Yes, a note of caution, obviously. We don't advocate anybody throwing themselves off a pier into freezing cold water, never having done it before. So it's about, you know, acclimatization, and that's building up your adaptation to cold water gradually. Definitely don't swim without somebody else. And yeah, just know your own limits. It's very personal. So I'm not going to come on here and say how many minutes and how long and so on. And as your guest said, there's very different types of engagement with water. Some people are interested in distance swimming. Others, and I'm one of those others, definitely interested in just being in the water and to feel the kind of sensory landscape of the feel and sound and smell of the water so that it improves our well-being.
So what kind of research are you doing specifically? Tell us a bit more about it.
Yeah. So the work that I'm really interested in is how we interact with water and the impact it has on our well-being across, I suppose, three different areas: our physical well-being, our psychological well-being, and also importantly, and sometimes overlooked, is the idea of our social well-being. I'm also really interested in how differential the access to blue spaces might be for people with a whole range of, I guess, disabilities, impairments.
Because Robin and Emma are quite lucky there, aren't they? And that they live near to what sounds like a place that's more or less been designed for them. But I guess for a lot of visually impaired people, that isn't going to be the case, is it?
Exactly. It really depends on the geography of where you live, but also, I guess, the topography and how well the infrastructure is set up to allow people with visual impairments to access the water. We're involved at the moment in a 3-year research project on visual impairment and access to blue spaces. So we'd really love to hear from people if you're interested in some of the positives of the things that work well for you accessing the water, or some of the challenges that you have, or if you're somebody who'd really like to get involved in outdoor swimming. We're going to be holding interviews in the early spring to gather some information on how we can better inform policymakers and others about how to provide a better service.
So is part of your aim to try to get local councils and perhaps other bodies to make what's potentially a good watery space more accessible? Things like handrails, clearly defined steps, that kind of thing. Is that, that's what you're talking
about? Yes, absolutely. I think bringing the issue to the attention of policymakers is the first hurdle. Often people with visual impairments are just clubbed together with general physical disabilities, and these sensory impairments are really different.
And how could people actually find out about that, visually impaired people?
They can contact myself and Sadie via the University of Brighton. The email address is Sadie Rockliffe, S.Rockliffe, Rockliffe, @brighton.ac.uk.
Dr. Catherine Kelly, thank you very much indeed. And that's it for today. If you have anything to say, anything to ask, or anything to raise, you can send us an email, intouch@bbc.co.uk. And you can leave us a voice message on 01 01 61 836 1338.